Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 214 of the Pixelated Sausage Podcast for this Anna Monday. I'm sticking with it. For June 15th, 2015. I am your host, Mark Kuznez, and on today's episode, I will be talking about all the shows I am caught up with. During this here spring season, there's a lot to go over. I will be diving into Sound Euphonium, which I finally checked out, and reviewing both Batum, which you'll hear me, and how I am not the biggest fan of that name, as well as Humanity Has Declined, which, spoilers, I quite like. Yeah, so I hope Humanity Declines fairly soon in real life, so it can be like that world where everything is really weird. delightfully weird, though. But yeah, that is what y'all can look forward to as you continue listening. This is, I believe, the largest, although the longest episode of the Pixelated Sausage Podcast yet. So get ready to dive in. And if y'all want to just listen to this or that of the show, if it's too long to just take all in at once, or just it's just too much for you, you can't take that much of me, there are timestamps in the show notes on the site, pixelatedsausage.com. So just go there, check out the post, and find out when the segment you want to hear is going on. So yeah, let's get to it. So, what am I doing with my voice right now? I don't know. Sound Euphonium, or otherwise known as Hebeke Euphonium, is a show about a band club and their quest to make it to nationals. And it's a show I finally caught up on because I've heard so much about it. And if y'all know me, y'all know that I am a fan of music. So anything that's based around a music, based around music, I'm going to be interested in. And I believe the studio, or potentially the creative team that is doing the show, did another music-themed show previously called K-On!, but I'm not sure if that's true or not. I feel like there have been a lot of comparisons to that, and it might be because of a similar creative team, if not the exact same creative team. But in Sound Euphonium, we follow a particular group of characters. It's an entire band. So there are many, many characters, and they all have their own names, so I do not remember them all, and that's one of the problems with the show, is that there's just so many characters, and I lose track of who's who, other than the main characters. And the focus is on this character, Kumiko, who she's always been a fan of music, but it seems like she's a bit more... Nah, I don't want to say she's a bit of a pushover, because that's not it. Well, she kind of is, though. But she doesn't take it as seriously as others. Not to say she takes it lightly or as a joke, but she is not so driven towards, you know, oh, we gotta make it to nationals. Or, you know, doesn't feel as distraught if something is not reached, a goal is not reached. But her journey starts, and we see her first in middle school with another character, Reina, who they were in this competition, and they just missed making it to nationals. There are the gold, silver, and bronze tier. They had sort of the second tier gold, which I can't remember what it was called. It was something like dull gold or whatever. It was basically, you were pretty good. You weren't good enough, though, so. And Kumiko is just like, after that happened, she's like, oh, Look at it. We made at least some kind of gold. Not bad. I didn't even think we'd do that. And Reyna is clearly a much more strict person on herself, is a bit of a perfectionist, we can tell right away. And she's just super upset about all this. And she takes what Kumiko says very poorly and just gets really upset and starts crying and screaming. And then we move on to high school, and we see that Kumiko, she moved on to a high school where she didn't really know anyone so that she can start fresh, start anew. She didn't even really seem that inclined to join band. She sees the band there and she's like, oh my god, they suck. And then this other character, Hajuki, sees her and hears that and it's like, oh, what sucks? And then she doesn't really say anything. She eventually figures it out. And they run into another character, Sapphire, who prefers to be called Midori, but no one really seems to care about her wishes and always calls her Sapphire, except for Kumiko and Hajuki. They're, you know, they're good friends with her, so they'll call her Midori. But everyone else is like, no, you're Sapphire. They call her Sapphire, and then she's like, it's Midori. And then they're like, okay, Sapphire. Which is, you know, that's kind of mean, you know. Gotta. I feel for Midori. Poor Midori. Why y'all gotta call her Sapphire? But they're interested in joining the band. Sapphire, look, I just did it. Oh my god, I feel horrible. I just call her Sapphire instead of Midori. Oh my, I am so sorry, Midori. I will not do it again. Probably. But she has past experience. She was a contrabass player. And Hajuki has no experience. But she's just like, oh, this looks cool. And she wants to be a trumpet player, but she ends up accidentally taking the mouthpiece of a tuba. That's what she buys and was like practicing it on. So she becomes a tuba player. And of course, it's called sound euphonium. So somebody has to play the euphonium. And who better than our main character, Kumiko, who has been playing since, I believe, fourth grade. And she's kind of hesitant towards joining, Kumiko is, and then becomes even more hesitant when she finds out that Reyna is actually at her high school, and she can't figure out why, because she could get into any of the music schools, the more prestigious high schools, but for some reason is at this particular high school. And we find out later it's because of their new teacher, the new music teacher, Noboru, who is the son of a very, very well-known like composer or conductor. I'm not sure what he did. And his father knew Reyna's, well, knows Reyna's father, who was a fantastic trumpet player. And so he also knows Reyna. And this comes into play in, I think, the last episode, actually. But seeing Reyna there makes Kumiko a lot more hesitant, because she's like, oh, you know, I have this history with her, and it wasn't, we did not leave on great terms, so I don't know if I really want to do all this. But she eventually does, because she actually is kind of a pushover, and people are like, hey, come on, let's do this. And she's like, okay. And she doesn't want to play the euphonium. She wants to try something new, but she gets kind of guilted into it, because they find out the head of the brass section, Asuka, she finds out that she's a fellow euphonium player, and they don't have many of those because it's not a super sexy instrument. And then she basically gets her to continue playing the euphonium, which I kind of constantly feel bad about it, just because it's like, oh, you didn't want to do this, do you? And I'm just curious if, you know, she does actually like the instrument or not. It seems like she does have a fondness for it, but she still wants to try something new. But yeah, so they all join the band club, and it starts off with, because they were a pretty crappy band team, they never got past bronze level. Noboru, I think on like the first day of not class, because it's a club, of their meeting, he asked them simple question: Do you want to have more of a casual experience where it's more about making memories, having these great memories with your fellow classmates and just having fun? Or do you want to go for nationals? Do you really want to make do you really want to try and reach that upper tier that we've never been able to do before? One will be a lot easier than the other. Of course, going for nationals will require a lot of work and effort and time. But if y'all want it, he leaves it up to the class to decide. Then that's what they'll do. And they choose to go for nationals. And Noboru is a bit of a strict teacher. And it's funny because he's also fairly young. When they first showed him, I thought he was maybe a senior or something, because he's on the younger side, and they introduce him outside of school. He's basically, I don't know where they exactly were, but it was something where they're like a bunch of names of either songs or something on this board or fence, and these two people were looking at him, and he basically went through a whole bunch of them and listed them in order of like quality or something. And so you realize how intelligent he is and that he knows a lot right there. And then also he's listening to some kind of classical music. I can't remember the song, but we get to hear what it is because he accidentally drops his phone, and then we get a close-up of it so we can say, oh, he's listening to classical music. And then he accidentally, his earplugs come out, and then he accidentally presses play so we can hear it. It's like, oh, classical, classical. So the people who he was talking to can be like, hey, isn't it that? And he's like, no, it's not. It's this, because I'm a genius. I know everything. But he delivers all his strictness with a nice, pleasant smile. He always has a very happy demeanor for the most part, except for when people start questioning his motives after finding out that he knows Reina, prior to being in the club and all that. But yeah, we follow this band club as they make their way through various competitions to see if they'll even be able to make it to nationals, and struggling to go from a group of not so great work, not, they don't really work well together, and they're not the greatest of musicians, but they make it. They make it work. They really fight and do all the work. And that's one of the issues I have with the show, is that I find it hard to believe that they make as much of a leap in quality and being able to work together and all that in the time frame that happens in the show. It just seems like they get a lot better really fast. And I don't buy it that much, but whatever, I guess. You gotta accept some things, don't you? So they end up like being terrible, but then they come together so they can. I don't even think it was a competition really in the beginning, but it's just for like all these bands going through this like little marching order to get attention, and they got quite a bit of attention. Like, hey, they're actually not too bad, and good on them for that. But then I don't think there was another competition. I think that the competition is potentially the next episode, but we just follow them as they're practicing and going through all their typical jazz. And the one thing that I will say is quite nice about the show is that it does a good job of portraying high school life in a regular way, not heightening this or being unbelievable. It's a very grounded portrayal of high school life, with characters who all fit in and have those high school age emotions. Kumiko, on a few occasions, is very concerned about her breast size. She thought that when she reached high school that they would grow, but they did not. And she is temporarily relieved when she looks at Hajuki and Sapphire. I did it again, and I promised you, Sapphire, that I wouldn't do it, but I did it. I just, yeah, my heart breaks for you because I'm such a horrible person, Midori. They're both flat-chested, just like Kumiko, which relieves Kumiko for the briefest of moments, because then she sees Asuka and she sees her voluptuous chest, and she's like, oh. But you have that, and you have a bit of a romance. You have a few romance things going on, which all are very well handled, I think. I think those are extremely well handled, though there is a bit of a Yuri vibe going on that I'm not sure where it's going or if it's going to dive full into that, because I'm not sure if it's going to try and push this romance between Kumiko and whatever the one guy's name is, which I don't remember, but there is this bit of a Yuri vibe between Kumiko and Reina, because for whatever reason, Reina is, and maybe it's because they have that experience together, but she also feels like there are similarities between her and Kumiko, that she can actually talk to Kumiko and not really anyone else. She opens up to Kumiko, she'll actually smile and show something other than this very strict, cold demeanor that she shows in most cases, which is kind of, there's somewhat of a sense to me that Reina is potentially bipolar, because she is very, very strict on herself and cold a lot of the time. But she does have these moments where she's really giggly and smiley, and it's just like, oh, this is weird for you. But so I'm not sure about all that. I don't have much experience with Yuris in general, and I believe I'm hopefully getting that term right for this kind of girl love quote. And I don't think it is like a lesbian love, but more just, you know, girlfriend, that type of love, where it's just two female characters who really love each other. Yeah, I don't know where I was, just kind of got stuck at a loss right there when I was talking about it. But I don't know. It's a solid show. The music in it is not that great, as far as, you know, being a music themed show compared to something like Your Lie in April. The music is not as good, and when they actually show the music being performed, and a part of the problem with that so far is that a lot of the music, most of the time when music is being played, it is the various characters practicing, so we're just getting this very short segment of a song or a piece repeated over and over and over again, and not much of a whole piece. But even when they do whole pieces, like, the animation is very limited. We might see them moving their fingers a little bit, or their mouths. There's a lot of mouth shots as opposed to really vivid, or not vivid, but, strong, you know, elaborate animations and whatnot. I mean, but Your Lie in April had that same problem at times, too, where the other characters, they would just show still shots and pan around, which was equally, if not worse. In terms of cheapness, they at least will have the characters, you know, moving their fingers and whatnot in Sound Euphonium. But yeah, the music could be better, and hopefully it improves as the show continues. But yeah, it's a solid show, but nothing too amazing as of yet. It's a very easily digestible show, but not particularly memorable. It's a show that, as it stands right now, when it's over, I'll be like, you know, that wasn't bad, but it wasn't, like, great either. It's, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a food I can compare it to. You know, it's like white bread. I don't know. I just, like, rush to that comparison. It's like white bread. It'll fill you up, but you won't be like, oh, what did I eat? Though I feel like you'd remember you ate white bread. I feel like you'd remember eating anything. So this comparison is going nowhere. So I should probably just shit up. Yeah, it's a solid show. I'd recommend checking it out. Cause it's pretty good. Nothing amazing. If you only have time for a few shows from the new season of the spring season to watch, I would just pass on it because there are better shows than this. But if you have the time to really dive into, you know, quite a bit, you know, a handful of different series, and it's worth at least giving it a shot, giving it that three-episode rule, checking out the first three episodes. And the one thing I will leave on is that the last episode or two, particularly the last episode, was super annoying because I have in my notes too, Yuko-chan, and in parentheses, I have, shield your children's ears, now. Are they shielded? Okay. In parentheses, I just have bitch trumpet player because she gets super annoying and keeps pressing the fact that she believes without a doubt that Noboru picked Reina for the trumpet solo because they have a past relationship, because they know each other outside of the club, and she just won't drop it, and she's super annoying. She gets really, really whiny, and she's just terrible. And I'm annoyed by the fact that all of her whining and getting other characters to feel like there is something going on to that, now this next episode is going to be a solo off where both Reina and the senior who was trying to get the trumpet solo are going to get to re-audition for these parts, for this particular part for the solo, and that whoever ends up winning based upon a vote from the fellow club members, which means it may not be who's best, but just the fact that, oh, the more people know the senior or like her because she's not cold, that she'll end up getting the part. And if that happens, that's just going to be annoying, you know, because Noboru kind of, he caved in to the pressure and was like, okay, I need to do something to get the team to become a team again. And it just sucks that happened because of some annoying B trumpet player. So yeah, Yuko-chan, you suck. I hate you. You're horrible. I hope you get kicked off the team. I don't know. I was like, I don't want to say anything too mean, but I don't like you. So yeah, that's Sound Euphonium. Check it out. And if you do, remember it's Midori, not Sapphire. And if you call her Sapphire, then just give yourself a nice big slap in the face. Like I'll do right now, and I will let y'all hear it. I'm literally going to slap myself in the face right now because I was so cruel in not remembering to call her Midori. So here goes. This is 100% a real slap to my face, not to my hand. I ain't cheating, though you'll never be able to know, will you? It kind of hurt.
Insane Ninja! Shing!
There have been a lot of shows this week. Well, there have been as many shows this week as there have been last week. But now I'm going to be doing a little weekly roundup since I'm mostly caught up with every... Well, these will be, of course, the shows that I am caught up on and only have one episode to talk about. So I will be going through, you know, this and that episode of various different anime series. Let's just get to it, huh? First I will talk about Ore Monogatari, and this episode kind of, I think it was called My Mountain, and it's where Takeo and Yamato, they go out to have like a replacement date for not being able to spend Yamato's entire birthday together. And it was kind of, it brought to light my biggest concern with the show, was this whole constant lovey-dovey, just, you know, lack of really any type of development or plot movement or conflict. It was just kind of, okay, more of these two characters. And while I enjoy the characters, the fact that the show is a 24-episode series, and I need something to happen because I think I'm going to get fairly tired of it soon if nothing does happen. And the problem with this episode especially was that it really did focus on Takeo and Yamato. Yeah, all your other side characters, especially Suna, who is my favorite character on the show, probably because I relate to him a lot, and I am, if you ask people who know me, they would say that I am quite like Suna. But we only got the side characters through these very, very brief series of vignettes. So they would, you know, they would show a good section of Takuya and Yamato. And then they would show all the other characters, like, what is everyone else doing during this time? And it's funny, too, because those are my favorite parts of the episode, is every time they would leave Takuya and Yamato, I would be like, oh, I like this. And especially Suna, who was just reading. That's all he was doing. Nothing exciting with him. I'm like, that is definitely me, too. But yeah, it was just kind of a somewhat exhausting episode because of how much it was all about Takuya and Yamato. And I know it's called My Love Story, but I still say and am a supporter of the real love story, the heart of Oremonogatari being the bromance between Takuya and Suna. That's the most interesting relationship to me. It's the relationship I just enjoy the most, in part because, you know, maybe it's partially because I can relate to that, but also I just think it's more interesting. And the whole lovey-doveyness of the Yamato Tako Takio. Why am I saying their names so often? That's getting tiring. But yeah, it's this whole first love thing, and I can see why it is the way it is, because when people go through their first love, it is very, you know, it's just like, oh my god, this is so magical, but eventually something's got to happen, because that's what happens. Nothing is perfect forever, and there's no way this can keep it up and not get just repetitive and tiring. And this episode in particular, I feel like, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like it had more of those situations where Takuya would always, in his internal monologue, he would say, Yamato, I love you. And that drives me nuts. I don't mind when it's sprinkled maybe once or twice in an episode, but I feel like he said it at least a half a dozen times, but I feel like he actually said it more. And that was just exhausting, because I'm like, god, stop. I'm so sick of hearing you say you love her in your head. Just tell her or shut up, because you're driving me nuts with this crap. And another issue I had is that while throughout the series they've shown Takuya to be super strong and, you know, almost unnaturally powerful and whatnot in various ways. I mean, like when that beam fell and him catching it, that was something that is not realistic, or even the whole fire situation. But in this episode, they really went all out on just throwing a incredibly unrealistic moment into it when Takuya and Yamato fall off the cliff, and it looks like they were way up high. And first, Takuya manages to like run down the mountain, then they land on this little ledge, but then that breaks, and then they just fall straight down. He turns around so that he'll land on his back and cushion the blow for Yamato, and he's not even hurt from it, not even the slightest. You know, in those situations where he caught the beam, you could see he was under a lot of stress, and it was the danger of everything that gave him the extra strength. And in the fire, he was sort of ready to just let the fire consume him until, you know, he gets the call and it gives him the strength to move on. This, he just, you know, I'm sure he wants to protect her, but he's unfazed, unharmed. The show is just becoming, and it's just like what I said when I first talked about the show, my concern with it, and it reminded me of On the Road by Jack Kerouac. I can't stand such extreme and constant positivity, because nothing in the world is like that. And some people might say, well, I like to have this as an escape. So I like to have it, you know, this just be this happy, lovey-dovey thing. And I'm like, that's great. And I've been all for that, but I don't, it's just a bit too much for me. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, it's bad for everyone else and that it should change for everyone else, but it's something that I am struggling to just thinking about watching it till the end. I probably will just because I made it this far, and you know, it's not that I hate watching it, it's just I'm not loving it anymore, really. And I mean, I may even be fine with the lovey-doveyness as long as they have a good amount of the side characters, but this is probably the weakest episode of the series for me so far, but yeah. Oh my god. Oh, I'm sorry for these really weird transitions, but I figured I'd throw in a bit of odd little anime transitions here and there instead of the Insult Ninja all the time, especially when this is all just one weekly roundup. That was ridiculous. And that is something you can also say about Food Wars, which I did watch the latest episode, and now I'm making my way to a site called My Anime List so I can get the name of a particular character, because I did not write them down ahead of time, so I want to at least get these two names right, so I can talk just a wee bit about the most recent episode. And while I'm getting those names, I will actually talk about the episode, which was the last episode ended on a huge cliffhanger. We had Soma challenging the really a-holy alumni to a Shokugeki. And it was like, oh my god, I can't wait for the next episode because they're going to have this great battle. And it wasn't as great as I was hoping for, in part because I think they dragged it on, the episode as a whole, due to the fact that they were always going to not show the final... They were only going to show the one, the alumni's meal and the reaction to his meal, and not the meal of both Soma and Megumi. But I did like the fact that they twisted it up a bit by having the main alumni guy say that Megumi had to prepare, she didn't have to prepare the meal herself, but she had to choose a recipe herself, and she was the head chef, and Soma was really just her not backup, her teammate, her helper. There you go. But the fact that we didn't get to see their piece actually delivered to the judges and didn't get to see the reactions, that was a bit disappointing, you know, because it's not really much of a cliffhanger, because we know, of course, that Soma and Megumi are going to win, because really, you're going to continue the show with them being expelled? I don't think so. And also, in the preview, we see a-hole alumni shedding a single tear, because clearly he was just beaten. But yeah, I mean, it was still a solid episode, and the whole, it was like Cabbage Team or whatever, that ridiculous aspect of it was great, and it was a solid episode. It just wasn't as amazing as previous episodes, but I'm still loving that show. It's still my favorite of the spring season, and yeah, I'm trying to think of anything else in particular really grabbed me about this episode, but I can't think. I did like the whole underground aspect of it too, of this particular Shokugeki, that it wasn't an official one. They couldn't let it get out, so it was like an underground Shokugeki. It's like Fight Club. The one thing you don't talk about Shokugeki is with alumni is that you don't talk about them. That's the number one rule. I think I just said the one thing you don't talk about is that you don't talk about it, which is true, but that's also the number one rule, which is how the Fight Club thing goes, I think. I'm losing it. But yeah, solid episode. A bit disappointing because we didn't get a... It didn't feel absolutely complete because it just felt like it ended on a artificial, unneeded cliffhanger because it wasn't much of a cliffhanger. It wasn't something like, oh, I'm super excited to see what happens next week because I know what's going to happen. You know, I just wanted to see everything play out this week and see that a-hole alumni get his a-hole handed to him. But I guess we are all going to have to wait until next week for that to happen. But I'm excited. Super excited. Loving this show. Food Wars is great. If you haven't checked it out, definitely check it out. It may not be something you want to watch with the entire family. If you're a youngin' and you like watching the occasional show with your parents, you might not want to watch this one with your parents. But everyone else, yeah, do it. It's lovely. Wonderful. I love it. Oh, plastic memories. What am I going to do with you? So, yeah, I'm all up to date with plastic memories. And I've been hot and cold with the show for a while now. And I think I am definitely leaning more towards cold. I did not particularly like this last episode. And I think part of my problem is, and to those who have accepted what Plastic Memories really is, I'm sure they're loving it. And maybe if I came back to it, you know, after an extended break, you know, from start to finish, you know, knowing what I know now, maybe then I would actually like it. But I am not a fan of Plastic Memories. And the reason is, and I mean, this episode just keeps that this point going forward, is that really it is a rom-com that occasionally dips into a very specific heavy theme with the whole robots, whatever they're called, I can't remember. But yeah, it's just this ridiculous, funny, cutesy rom-com between a human and an android, Skasa and Isla. And I just can't accept that because there's so much potential for it to be a lot more. And it started out with all of that, with, you know, them having to go and retrieve a few of them and seeing the bonds that these androids have with their human, I guess you could call them owners, but I think they would look at them more as friends or family, depending on, you know, the relationship they have with their particular android. And then they just kind of, they don't even really do that anymore. They don't spend that much time on retrieving. They had like this small arc where they have the black market situation, and that was some emotional bits, but overall it's really just a rom-com. It is a romantic comedy. Emphasis on the comedy. There isn't that much drama, and I feel like at this point the drama is really just forced and kind of artificial and isn't earned. And I think also part of the having all that kind of dramatic material at the it was mostly at the beginning of the series, and I mean a little bit in the middle, but really heavy in the very beginning, especially the first episode. It was like, oh, we're going to tug at your heartstrings, and then we're like, no, we're just going to be a rom-com. And I think part of that is to try and make the end of the series to add a very, very, to me, artificial sense of emotion and the feels, as we so like to call it. And I just don't... I'm not eating it up. It's not working for me. And it's disappointing because... like I said, I think the world and this whole concept is very interesting, and it's something that could, it's prime material for what could be an amazing show that I think is just kind of decided to be this rom-com instead, and that's disappointing. I can't say anything other than it's disappointing. I also fully expect, because they've hinted at it by talking about it in numerous episodes, that Isla will end up being able to get her memories back. And, you know, maybe it's through her diary. She'll be able to use that or read it. And whatever, for whatever reason, that's going to happen. So we have this wonderful happy ending too, because la-di-da. But yeah, I'm just not feeling plastic memories anymore. I mean, it's just going further downhill. Which is, I mean, to me, plastic memories is essentially like watching Blade Runner, and then halfway through Blade Runner, you realize it's really just a rom-com. It turns into, whatever, 50 First Dates. I don't know why I picked that of all movies, but, you know, there you go. It's Blade Runner that halfway through turns into 50 First Dates. So it's this very interesting sci-fi setting and whatnot that becomes an Adam Sandler romantic comedy that's all about the giggles and some slapstick and the whoa. That's plastic memories. Oh, God. I don't even remember what that sound clip is from. It's kind of how I feel about plastic memories, which I just talked about. But this is a little girl who's speaking to some guy in English, and he calls her a little girl, and then she just loses it and starts swearing, just saying F you, MRF-er, and it was a wonderful scene. And I had to put it in, even though it doesn't really make sense as a transition or as anything other than something to make me giggle. But Punchline did not make me giggle this last episode. Punchline has, as I've talked about it in the last episode, it's gotten more interesting as it reached that point where it's like, oh, these episodes were really just kind of building the foundation for the story we want to tell. And I'm actually intrigued. And this episode was, in particular, a bit more on the serious side. There are still plenty of, you know, the weirdness of the show and just what it is and the extreme fan service that exists in it. Though I can't remember if there was a super lot of fan service in this last episode, but it felt a lot heavier. It felt like, you know, the weight of all this bad that is going to happen, particularly with the asteroid and just these people's lives, not just the world in general, but the people who are living in this apartment building and all that are, it just feels a lot heavier. It feels like, wait, it's like things are getting serious now, okay? It's all laughs and giggles before, but now it's getting close. The world is about to come to an end and we need to stop it. We need, you know, it needs to not happen. And I find that interesting, this kind of tonal change. And I'm very curious to see what happens, because it's been a very interesting ride, and Yuta is becoming a more interesting character, especially after finding out that he inside Aishi's body, what is it, Ryan? No, I can't even remember. Like I said, in the last episode, there's so many different things going on now, but it's got me in its hooks so far, or not so far. It now has me in its hooks, and I'm much more interested in seeing where it goes. It's by no means the best new show at all. I mean, it's definitely still on the lower end, but it's done a much better job in its second half than in its initial. It's almost like the reverse Plastic Memories, where Plastic Memories had me much more in its grasps during the first half, and it's losing me now. And Punchline almost lost me, and then it had a big switch. It flipped a switch, and now I'm much more invested in the series. So, if you look at it and think it's somewhat intriguing, I would recommend checking it out, and just know that the first, I think, 5 episodes, in particular, episodes 2 through 5, are a bit slower because they are essentially just building the foundation for what the story really is, and the 6th episode will reveal a lot, and then everything going forward is much more interesting. Oh yeah, punchline. And I love that. I love that intro music. And yeah, I just love that. It's almost, I still skip it because I don't like wasting time. I like making the most of my time when watching anime, because it's just, you know, I want to watch as much as I can, and a minute and a half here and there, it adds up, you know. Whatever, like that, a dozen shows and I've got a free episode. Punchline. Last but certainly not least, we have, is it wrong to try to pick up girls in a dungeon? And the answer is, all these episodes in, no. Though, of course, as we all have seen throughout the series so far, and I'm sure is just exactly how it goes in the manga, Belle doesn't really try to pick up any girls. They just seem to all flock towards him, and we get more of that in this episode. But it was a solid episode. You know, it was, there wasn't that much adventuring or super duper action. It was more so, I think, really about showing the kind of, you know, continuing to show the kind of person that Belle is, and to continue lifting him higher and higher into hero status, as you see how much he fights to protect and make sure he saves his fellow companions, Wolf and Lily. So you get a lot of good emotional content there. And there's, yeah. I mean, it wasn't the most memorable episode, and there wasn't a great deal of character development, but it was a solid episode, and, you know, I'm excited to see what happens next episode after the team has fully recovered, and all that jazz. I think the most interesting part about the latest episode is that we get to see the 18th floor of the dungeon. We get to see that there's actually some nice areas of the dungeon, that there is this type of safe zone, this very non-violent area, this very hospitable area, which, I mean, it seems like potentially there are people living there, maybe? It would seem weird for people to go all the way through the previous floors to reach there to work and sell their wares and all that. They would have to be, I would assume, either with large parties or very, very capable dungeoneers, or former dungeoneers themselves. But it was nice to get in to see a bit more of what the dungeon has, not really to offer, but that's a weird thing to say about it, but just to see that there's more to the dungeon than just, oh, we fight, even though I'm sure the majority of the dungeon is just that. But yeah, that was nice about it. But yeah, it was just a solid episode. Nothing too special about it. I mean, I'm trying to think about things to say, and I'm coming up with a blank, because it was solid, but not particularly memorable. I'm trying to think, was there anything about it that was particularly just super exciting or memorable, something that stands out? And I've got nothing other than, I mean, the scene that really stands out to me is the part that really focuses on showing Belle just pushing himself to the limit to save his friends and, you know, to be the hero that we all know he will become. You know, when he has both Welf and Lily in his arms and is carrying them to avoid the, what was it? The gigantic thing. It wasn't called gargantuan. Whatever that giant monstrosity was that was in it, that was potentially could have gotten in his way of reaching the 18th floor. I forget what he was saying, but he kept repeating either a single word or a very, very short phrase. And just like, you know, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. And you would see the intensity in his dialogue, in his words, just elevate more and more. And you could really feel and sense all the energy and effort and every single bit of himself just being put into getting his friends to safety, because that's what mattered to him. It just makes him this incredibly likable character. I mean, I really like Bell as a character, and I think it's a fun show. It's an enjoyable show. It has some it's I don't know. It's just a really, really good show, and I'm digging it. I'm digging the RPG-esque elements that don't revolve around it being in a game world, that this is actually just a world with a dungeon. Like, it is very sort of Etrian Odyssey and those type of games in the way it's set up, in that there's this dungeon and you just keep going deeper and deeper and it gets more difficult. But it doesn't use that as this is, you know, regular people playing in a game world, or they got sucked into a game world. So I like that about it, that it doesn't, it has those kind of elements, but it doesn't fall back on them. So, yeah, good episode. Good episode. Not the most amazing episode, which I guess that's kind of a theme for this week. It was a week of solid episodes, but nothing particularly great. And maybe that's because we're coming to the end, so it's kind of this slow build up to these grand ends, because I'm not sure how long. I believe this is a 13 episode season for Dungeons, and then I think most of them other than Ore Monogatari are 13 episodes as well, but I'm not exactly sure. But that will do it for this week's weekly roundup of the shows I'm caught up on. So yeah, excited for another week. I can't wait to go through this all again next week. Are you going to join me next week? I mean, you're not invited to my house. That was not an invitation. Do not even think about it. Don't. You don't know where I live, so it doesn't really matter.
Inside Ninja! Shing!
Batoom! 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 Is an anime based off a manga. An anga. I don't know if it's still going on, but there have been many volumes. So, the story is far surpassing where it is with the show. And that's part of the problem, which I will get into. First, let me write down what the show is for y'all who may not have seen it or know much about it. And essentially, I hear a lot of comparisons to Battle Royale whenever I mention what this show is, because that's what I've heard Battle Royale is. I've still never seen it because I'm not a super, super, super huge fan of gore. But, you know, I guess I'm more accepting of it in an animated sense because it's not realistic, in that it doesn't look like an actual human being, whatever, to them. but this is a world where, so Batoom, which I hate that friggin' T. I wish it was just called Boom or something that wasn't, oh, let's just put a stupid T where it doesn't belong. Because it just makes saying Boom so annoying to me. And maybe I'm not even saying it right, but I feel like that's how they were saying it on the show. But yeah, I hate that about it so much. But Boom is a video game where, I mean, it's a, I think the perspective the players see is a third-person perspective, but that's not really important. It's a team sort of deathmatch team versus team game where you're trying to kill all the other players. And unlike, you know, a first-person shooter, in this game, you only get bombs to use. You don't have any other type of weapons. And what ends up happening is the creators of that game kidnap, I think, around 30 people. And these are people who have all been selected by people they know. And it's typically because they have annoyed people in the world for various reasons. And these 30 or so people are kidnapped and thrown on this island in the middle of nowhere that doesn't really have any means of feeding oneself. So there are supply drops daily to help the people survive in a way. And what they have to do is everyone has had this, like, green gem surgically embedded into their hand, and that gives them this ability to see other players. It's essentially like a radar, so they can do a little, like, I don't know if they have to, like, flick something, like make a little gesture if they think it, and they'll get a radar, a little ping, and they'll be able to see if any other players are nearby, if those other players are moving and they have that gem still in them. And what the people, the players, have to do to get out of this island. So it's also, I mean, it's got a bit of that Hunger Games vibe too, which is really just like a Western version of Battle Royale, a lot of people say. So once again, back to Battle Royale. But the players have to collect 8 of those gems, including their own. So they really just have to collect 7 of them. And how they do that is by killing other players. So they have to go around murdering each other, and the only weapons they get are bombs. Each player has a specific type of bomb, though when they kill another player, they are able to use that player's bombs if that player, that now dead player, left any behind. But they have to kill them. They can't, like, beat them up and not have killed them. Though maybe there's a potential if, because we do run into a character that had their arm blown off, and that knocked the gem out. So potentially all you need really is the gem of that person to be able to use their bombs. Otherwise, they won't work for you. But that was never really... There are a lot of issues with if you really overthink the show in terms of how everything works, which I'll be getting into. But you essentially just have to kill 7 other players to get off this island. A helicopter will come and pick you up, and then you'll be returned to the regular world where people apparently hate you so much that they would send you to a island where you have to kill other players to come back to the real world. So you are sure to be returned to a very warm welcome. But the show centers around a few characters. The main character, Sakamoto, he was one of the best, I think he was the best Japanese player of Batum, and one of the best in the world. And he's sent by his mother. And then there's also another character, Himiko, who he, Sakamoto, actually knew from the game world, and they were actually married in the game world, but they don't realize this until a bit later, and she keeps this from him for a while because she is not the most trusting of men. Because the one thing about the show is that it is 100% an adult show. It is 100% mature. There's violence. I'm not sure if there was that much language. There's probably some language, but there's also, I mean, it deals with rape in more than one episode. So, and what that does to somebody emotionally. So, I mean, you'll have a particular episode that's really, really heavy with dealing with rape, but you'll see the side effects of all that for quite a few episodes. So, this is definitely not a show for kids. If all the killing each other with bombs was not enough for y'all to know that. But it deals with some heavy themes, and I think it does a decent job with all of them. It is a bit sad, not sad, it's just frustrating to see Himiko for the most part be this kind of defenseless woman. She does defend herself when put into a corner, but in many ways she probably would have died if not for Sakamoto. And you know, it just sucks to see, oh look, here's another defenseless girl, woman who needs a man to protect her and or give her the strength to fight back. And come on. There is a strong female character in, I don't remember her name, but she was just kind of this crazy, she was a crazy person who was fine murdering people, but she was like, I'm not going near the dead body to get the gym. It's nasty. But yeah. You also have one of the other main characters. So the team up, because most people end up getting into teams and they will probably end up betraying each other, but the main team of your good guys, your main protagonists, are Sakamoto, Himiko, and then this real estate or car salesman, Taira, who is really, he's just an annoying character who whines a lot and cries a lot and is just kind of a ball and chain for most of the season, and eventually goes crazy and tries to kill his fellow teammates before killing himself. And yeah, he was just annoying for most of the... I was glad that he was kind of out of commission for most of the season, so that it was just like, oh, when they returned back to their base at that point in time, he was just there, you know, being all, oh, you're back, I'm so happy. And then they would leave again to go get supplies or do this or that. And then he'd be like, oh, you're leaving me again? Why are you doing this? But yeah, I really like the premise of the show. And I like, there are a lot of interesting characters and, you know, a lot of crazy characters. There's a lot of history that you end up finding out between characters, that they end up kind of knowing each other previous to being in this world. But the one problem, like I said, I like this show overall, but the problem I have with it is that there's a lot of unbelievable aspects to it, and especially with the bombs themselves, which are, you know, the main weapon. They seem to only kill when the show is like, okay, now we finally got to get rid of this character or whatever. I mean, there are plenty of times where a bomb will happen, an explosion will happen, and you're left thinking, I'm left thinking, well, that should have won, that one should have killed that person, but it didn't do anything. Or it should have at least injured them in some serious way, but it didn't. So what's with these bombs? I mean, they seem to be the most harmless bombs, except when they need to be harmful. And that's annoying. I feel like the most always powerful bomb were the implosion bombs, which weren't really used that often. They were the bombs of this psychotic little kid, Kira. But yeah, it's just weird to have the show where these bombs don't seem to do anything. They just seem to maybe knock back these fellow players as they're fighting one another, and nothing else. It never, with a show, I'm not an expert with regarding bombs, you know, specifically like frag grenades, but I feel like they would do more damage than they do on the show. So what I think the show really requires is a level of disbelief and willingness to accept the fact that this is fake. It is not grounded in any kind of reality. The bombs, just let them be, because yeah, it's not gonna do the damage you think they're gonna do. But yeah, if you can get past that, I think it's a solid show to check out. It's on Crunchyroll, and the biggest problem I have with it, really, more so than the bombs and all that, is that it ends in a way that is not at all. And it ends in a way that's like, okay, can't wait for season two. I'm guessing the show didn't do well enough to have that season come about, so that kind of sucks. Of course, there is the manga that y'all can check out. I think it's through volume 11, I believe, so there's quite a bit, and I probably will check it out to see where the story goes, because it is an interesting world, you know, and I don't mind accepting the fact that grenades are, these bombs are just not, they work when they want to work, when they don't want them to work, and that they only kill when they need to kill a character. But yeah, I just wish it wasn't called Batum. That's my biggest complaint. Forget the lack of an ending. Forget the fact that bombs don't make any sense in this show. The fact that it's called Batum is really the thing that just, it really grinds my gears. It just is like, come on, Batum. Batum, 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 Batum. God, so stupid. I hate that. I don't know why I'm talking about this, but Batum. On Crunchyroll, so check it out. I think it was 12 episodes, not 13. Could have used the 13th episode to end it, unless they ever do come back, which they probably won't. But yeah. Batum. It's worth checking out if you're into, if you're looking to watch something that's a bit more adult and mature and violent. It definitely, I will say that the action definitely picks up in the last, say, quarter of the season. It gets pretty cool, and there are a lot of interesting characters on the show, even when they only are around for a few episodes. So it was a fun watch. I got through pretty quick and enjoyed it overall. I just, you know, I have my issues with it, like most shows. You know, I've said this numerous times, and I will always say it like a broken record. No show is perfect. Every show is going to have issues, probably. But yeah, Batum is definitely a solid little anime and worth checking out. But it won't blow your minds. Get it? Because bombs blow up. They go boom.
Inside Ninja! Shing!
Have you ever wondered, why aren't there enough animes out there that have sentient pieces of bread, no, loaves of bread, that are alive? That's what sentient means. Well, there was no point in saying that. But have Lego-esque arms and legs that are made of metal. It's important, they're made of metal, not plastic. These are high-end loaves of talking bread that will, at some point, just rip their heads clean in half and let blood just squirt all over the main character. If you've been asking that question a lot, wondering why aren't there enough, well, I can tell you there's at least one, and it goes by the name of Humanity Has Declined. For short, hentai, not hentai, hentai, or otherwise known as Jinrui wa Sutai Shimashita. And it's a very interesting show. It is quite possibly the most interesting show I've seen. And it's I've only watched, I believe, the first four episodes or so, and it seems to be broken up in two episode arcs, so an arc will take place over two episodes. It's very, very colorful and has these very beautifully colorful and vibrant, like, painterly backgrounds. But it's already on its way to, like, cracking my top five, because I like odd shows. I like peculiar anything. I like things that are a bit different and off the wall, and that is definitely what Humanity Has Declined is. And it's also something that has a lot of commentary on the actual industry and does a lot of satire. There was, I think, the last episode I watched, that's the one, I believe. They basically, it's a two-episode arc about manga, and the fourth episode which is the second part, takes, I think, almost entirely in place inside a manga panel. And it's these various characters, main character and a few others, who are trying to figure out how to get out. And they're doing things that, you know, they're like, just end everything with a cliffhanger because they want to be the most popular manga series because they think that doing that and then ending will help them get out of this nightmarish hell they're in. But then people start to get wind of that and then they're like, oh, we don't like this anymore. Drops in popularity. They try expanding the panel, making it larger to have a two-page spread. And they talk all about this on the show. So it's very self-referential. It knows what it's doing. It's not, oh, we're laughing at you because you're so weird and off the wall. It knows what it's doing. It's making fun of the industry. It's commentating on the actual industry that it is a part of. And it's super interesting. But also the show, let me rewind a little bit and talk about what the show is. The premise basically is that humankind, as we know it, what we are, has declined. There aren't that many humans anymore. And what they've been replaced with essentially are fairies who they refer to as humans, I think, a few times, but they're still the fairies. Though they're not the fairies you would think of. They're not like, oh, they have wings and fly around. They look more like garden gnomes, and they're really creepy. They always have these really wide, large smiles on their face. And they talk in high-pitched voices, and there are so many of them. I've seen in the previews where there will be way more than they've shown so far, but there are way more fairies than humans, and they're the dominant creatures. And they're also, there's some kind of mystical element about them. You see them here and there doing things in the background, or the main character, Watashi, she works as this mediator between humans and fairies. So you see her interacting with a few here and there, but there hasn't been like a big fairy. We haven't really gotten the big picture. And it seems like the show, for anyone who really wants to have an overarching plot or some grand story or some kind of linear aspect to it, this definitely wouldn't be the show for them because it does seem to be just broken up into these little story bits. And I'm not sure if we will get a over-encompassing story. It is only a 12-episode series. I think there was also like a 6-episode special or so and maybe an OVA, but I'm not entirely sure about all that. But it's just really funny and fun. And the main character, Watashi, she's an awesome character. She's an awesome protagonist because she's smart. She's clever. She's not helpless. She's just a really, really strong female main protagonist. And she's just, I mean, she'll give characters crap. She won't really back down. She's a confident, super awesome character. And I think it might have been the first episode, because she recently cut off her hair, and I was confused because in all the promo material I saw, she had long hair, and she took this fairy like hair growth formula that grew her hair super fast overnight, basically. But it also turned her hair is essentially sentient too. And I was about to say, I don't think it talks to her, but no, it did talk to her, and it like shook its hair to say yes at a point too, because she was confused as to how she was not eaten up by this factory munching thing that was like a giant Pac-Man with metal teeth that was used to dispose of bad goods or whatever. She wasn't sure how she wasn't eaten up there. And then she was in this cage and the bars were bent open and it had to be somebody super strong, but she didn't see who did it. And it was her hair. Because her hair is alive now. It's super long and super alive. Because fairy stuff does... And it's just, it's really funny. And I almost am, I don't want to talk about spoilers with it just because of how fun it is to watch everything play out. But I will, you know, here are some more spoilers. I won't go in any more spoilers after this. I highly recommend checking it out. It is on Crunchyroll. So, you know, just go watch it because it's great. But this, the first two episode arc has to do with them really wanting food and wanting meat and not being able to do it. And then chickens ran away. And I don't think these chickens who ran away had anything to do with what ended up happening. But the fairies built this factory to create goods and foods and whatnot. But I guess it was overtaken or whatnot. And it was being run by skinless chickens who were able to talk, but she couldn't understand them without using these special glasses. And then they started swearing and just cussing at her. And she, at a point, had the like translator a little bit off put. So it was saying everything literally. So it would be saying female dog instead of bitch. But then it changed to bitch. So there is adult language in the show. And like, I mean, when the piece of bread ripped his head off, well, head in half, that was fairly violent. And it was, I remember seeing that in the promo material. And then I forgot about it. And then it happened at like the very end of the first episode. I was like, oh yeah, this is my kind of show. Which I guess that says a lot about me for a piece of bread that's talking to rip its head in half to make me say, oh yeah, this is my kind of show. But yeah, it's super fun, super funny. It's clever. It's smart. It's beautiful because it's super colorful, especially after watching another show, Batum, which I'll be talking about at a point. Maybe I already did, or maybe I will in the future. But going from that, which is really dark and violent and it fairly adult with some hard themes to deal with, going to this, that's fairly light and just playful and super, super colorful. This, I'm trying to think, it may be the most colorful anime I've seen so far because it's just, it's very vibrant. It's super like pastel-y colors. But yeah, I highly recommend it. There's also, she has a character. The show has a character. Her assistant, who I don't believe they've given a name to yet, and she just refers to as her assistant and just calls him assistant. And he doesn't talk, but whenever she talks to him, he like just looks at her or whatever, maybe makes a slight gesture, and she completely understands him. And it's like a long, it's almost Groot-esque in a way, but he doesn't even say a single thing. He just looks at her, and he has a, I don't know if he has a camera with him at all times, but he was chasing the chicken. The chickens are apparently super afraid of people with cameras or their flashes because they were running like crazy. When he started chasing, though, he was like, I gotta document this. And he was just chasing all those skinless chickens with his camera, flashing, 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 until they eventually cornered them on a cliff, and they all flew off. And then they said at the end of the second episode that, you know, because of that, you know, whenever, like, young boys and girls or whatever really are wanting some meat, they're hungry for meat, that random skinless chickens will just flop out from the sky. They'll just rain from the sky because that is a thing. And when a human's hands touch a skinless chicken, it will no longer be able to move. It just stops moving. All right. But yeah, it's a fantastic show. I just love it. And it was a show that I saw the promo for a while ago and I was like, this looks like it's for me. And I bought it blindly, and I just never got around to watching it until, well, now. And I'm so sad that it took me this long to start watching it, because it is so me. It is so good. I highly recommend it. Once again, it's Humanity Has Declined. Do it before humanity in real life declines. So, before I move on to the next little thing I'll be talking about, I do want to talk a bit more about Humanity Has Declined and turn this into a review. So, this is me talking after I've talked about it, if you can already tell. But I did finish the show, and I love it. I adore the show a whole hell of a lot. It is probably in my top five, but there is one issue I have. It didn't bother me so much, because when you look at it, really, it is just a bunch of small 1 to 2 episode, usually 2 episodes, story arcs. But it is not, the way it was aired was not in chronological order. So it sort of goes backwards from the most recent point in time all the way to the past, when the main character is not, they are sort of just being first introduced to the fairies. And that was kind of, it was first initially a little confusing, and then it became more so jarring, and it was especially jarring, I think, with episode 10, which was the episode where she is first doing, she's basically doing her job for the first time. And it plays off, it works very well as a, okay, let me introduce you to this world and to what is going on. And to have that happen at episode 10, that's somewhat of a problem. Okay. God. Sorry about that. It's just a little bit of an autoplaying ad, which, you know, those things are just, they're so delightful. I mean, who does not love an autoplaying ad? Where was I? I don't remember, really. But, yeah, I think I was talking about how episode 10 in a 12-episode season is not the best place to put your introduction to the world, essentially. So that is a bit of a problem. But the show really is just, and I know it's based on manga, and I'm not sure how that was structured. I tried looking into it a little bit, but then I just got like, oh, forget it. But, you know, the out-of-orderness isn't so much of a problem, because the story really is not that important. The overarching story, that is, what I mean to say. You know, there isn't some great grand plot that, even if you took all the episodes and put them in chronological order, that it would be this, like, great overarching story. It's really just a collection of shorts that take place in the same world that are quite often satirical and funny and clever. And you have your main character, who I don't believe she does have a name. She's often referred to as granddaughter. A lot of characters on the show don't seem to have names. Like, oh, it's granddaughter, the assistant, Silver is one of her fellow students. And I think granddaughter gets a nickname of Sweets at school. So, you know, it's more so just a collection of short satirical stories that are funny and clever and will comment on, you know, consumerism in some ways and industrialization. And it's just a very, very fun, clever, I think it's a rather beautiful show, just because of how colorful it is. It's a very colorful show, and I really like that about it. Especially after, you know, going from something that was a bit more dark and dirty to something that is as colorful as Humanity Has Declined was quite the delight. I will say, regardless of the order, I do think the last few episodes, you know, and maybe they would have been better suited if they were shown in the front end of the series run, but I didn't think they were that strong, and maybe that's because they weren't as fairy heavy, because it was pre granddaughter working with the fairies and all that, so it was more of her origin story, but pre-fairy mediator position and whatnot. So those episodes weren't as great and they weren't, they had their funny dark moments and whatnot, but they weren't as satirical, and they were just a bit weaker. And no, I don't even think it was that important that we find out where Granddaughter came from, or this. I didn't find them to be that important to what overarching story is there and to the world. It's just like, can you bring back the fairies? Because the fairies are great. I mean, the fairies are involved. They're just not, I don't know. And maybe they are involved to the same degree, and I'm just not remembering it that way because I didn't think their place in the episodes was that strong. But yeah, the last few episodes were a bit weak, I'd say. But overall, I just really love the show. I do think that the show is definitely, it is 100% not for everyone. And if you're somebody who wants, I mean, the order issue, you can alleviate that by just looking up, you know, what order they should be put in. But the fact that there isn't really much of a plot at all, and it is a bunch of little short vignettes, you know, little stories, that is definitely not going to be everyone's liking. But I really liked it, and I'm sad that, I know there was, I think I mentioned this previously, like a 6-episode special, and maybe an OVA. I am a bit sad, and I don't know how much material there is from the books, but I am a bit sad that there isn't more in this world, because it was just a lot of fun to, you know, dive into and consume. I mean, I watched the series like in 2 days or so. I just ate it up because it was just so great. And I was just like, oh man, why is this only 12 episodes? But that's what it is. Anyway, you know, no show really is without issues. I mean, even the best of the best are not always, you know, shooting on all cylinders. Is that how that phrase goes? I never really use it, so I'm not sure. But like, Cowboy Bebop doesn't always hit everything perfectly. And Humanity Has Declined also does not hit everything perfectly. I'm not saying Humanity Has Declined is on the same level as Cowboy Bebop. I really, really love Cowboy Bebop. Though I would also say that in its own way, it's not that far off. For me, of course. But yeah, I would highly recommend checking it out. It is on Crunchyroll, so you can check it out. Check out the first few episodes. I think, you know, the common 3-episode rule works well, but since, you know, most of the episodes are 2-episode arcs, I would recommend watching the first 4 episodes to see if you're feeling it or not. And, you know, if chronological order is an issue for you, do that as well. But I think, I don't know, the problem with that is that I think the first 4 episodes are so strong, and that if you were to go in actual order, that you would not be able to, those would not be the first 4 episodes you watch, so that 3-episode rule I think would be detrimental. But yeah, I quite enjoyed Humanity Has Declined. I would go so far as to say I love this show, and it's probably in my top 5, which is a much more valuable spot as I'm consuming, and as the number of anime shows I've watched have increased, being in my top 5 is becoming more of a valuable thing. So yeah, Humanity Has Declined. Check it out now. Humanity is declining right now with the existence of this podcast, as you can clearly see. No, you can't see it. You can hear it through your ears, but you can't see it through your eyes. You also can't see it through your ears, unless you have evolved into a new human, and then maybe your version of humanity will not decline, but increase, and be the subject, be the reason for my humanity's
declination. That's not a word. Decline. Yeah, I just rambled on for about a minute, so yeah, you're welcome.
Inside Ninja Shing.
Well, that will do it for this here episode of the Pixelated Sausage Podcast. I hope y'all enjoyed it, and hope y'all have a lovely rest of the day wherever you are. Once again, I'm your host, Mark Kuznez. Y'all can find me on Twitter and Instagram at PXSausage. That is, once again, PXSausage. If you're into the video games, check out the other podcasts I do, Pixelated Radio, which you can find at the site where you can also find this show, which you probably already know and could probably already guess, PixelatedSausage.com. And if you're a fan of racing, going vroom 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 in your cars, check out Sports Car Unleashed, which you can find at scunleashed.com. Once again, thank y'all for listening, and have a lovely, lovely day.
Hver maður frá frakasti, kutu, ég gleymdi ekki því sem þú gerði, kutu, þú mátt ekki að vala sár sokki, kutu, finna þú ekki fyrir núna, farðu, 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 þetta maður mín, elska mín. Mother of me, let that kiss you bad, let that kiss you bad, man. Sem þú gerði kutu Núna sjáðu því sem ég mun gera kutu Hjartan skal deyja aldrei kutu En þú er ekki hjörtu Farðu 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 Þetta maður mín Elska mín Maður mín Let that kiss you bad, let that kiss you bad, man.